This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The Albion and Marshall school districts have started the process that could lead to Marshall annexing Albion schools. Both school boards have approved the plan. Albion voters still have to give their blessing. We're going to talk about school districts merging and consolidating with two Western Michigan University professors, Joe Kredovics and Walter Burt. Both teach in Western's Department of Educational Leadership, Research, and Technology. Thank you both for being here.
Well, thank
Thanks
you.
For having us.
Give me a feeling of what it's like to be an educator, and Joe, you have some experience here, on the ground when districts start consolidating, merging, coming into, you know, several districts, or, you know, at least more than one district decide to become one.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of fears, and some of them are not just fears, they're reality. When you consolidate schools, you know, how many teachers are you going to lose? How many administrators you're going to lose? Who's going to become the new administrators? And particularly when you're consolidating schools that are racially as different as some of the schools in North Carolina are, or were, you have some real issues with the perceptions on the part of teachers, the perceptions on the part of parents, and the perceptions on the part of students. Which need to be addressed very early on in order to be successful, much as they did in Raleigh, North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, High Point, and Greensboro. So that's one of the issues that needs to be taken in consideration.
And in North Carolina, everyone went basically to county-wide districts, correct?
Right. Every county except Orange County and Chapel Hill Carrboro when I was there.
Walter, you also have a long resume, educational experience that goes beyond just being a professor. What is your view of how district mergers, annexations, consolidations come about? What's the problem for the professionals, and what might be the problem for the students?
When you desegregate, integrate school, it's a very complex phenomenon. You're not just bringing children together. It goes much deeper, because you have to think in terms of what is happening with staff, how are you involving communities in this whole process, how are you ensuring that the parents from respective communities are able to feel that their children are coming to a new environment and get a quality education. And so those things have to be factored into. For example, if you bring staff in, are they going to see teachers, principals that represent or are knowledgeable of their backgrounds and experiences? What kind of training are you going to provide staff to merge those two staff together? Oftentimes, these things are overlooked, and you could literally result in a very polarized staff. And so those factors have to be considered when undergoing an endeavor like this.
You have been involved in, amongst other things, the deficit elimination program for the Pontiac schools. How difficult is it to straighten out the finances without doing what Albion has been doing in terms of, you know, closing schools and basically saying we're going to consolidate our district or shrink our district, as the case may be?
Well, there are complexities in both, in terms of reducing deficits. In the case of, let's say, Albion and Marshall, you're literally getting into the tax base and what happens when new millage elections occur and how those money's going to be distributed. That's much more complex than, let's say, eliminating a one school district's deficit. So these are matters that the community need to be educated on, and then how those money's going to be distributed, let's say, between communities. Because I'm sure that the Albion residents may say, well, are all of our children going to go over to Marshall? Will there be schools in Albion? And how is that plan going to be factored in, and how are those resources going to be distributed? So this is something that certainly needs to be discussed openly, because there are no secrets when it comes to school consolidation. It needs to be quite transparent.
And Albion's already lost its high school. That is closed down. They've started sending middle school students to Marshall. I mean, when you start going down that road, is it tough to see any way that this ends other than a school district eventually being annexed?
I think you're traveling down a road, and while there's a possibility for return, it would be very, very improbable. You know, and I think that part of what Walter was saying in terms of the difficulties is that the identity that many of these school districts had. I was working with a county in Indiana that was talking about merging several districts, and there were just so many difficulties and the points of pride that each community had. And my grandparents and my parents went to this school, and there's just so much baggage. And as Walter was saying, if you don't deal with it openly and transparently, I think part of the most important aspect of this is identifying why it is you're going to merge, why it is you're going to annex, and then to be very, very open about that. This is our problem, and this is one solution. Do you have others? But if you don't have any others, then this is the path we need to go down. And I think that's where Albion and Marshall, particularly Albion, was at that time.
See, the unfortunate part, what Marshall and Albion are going through now is quite typical of what is happening throughout the country. The shift in the population caused many communities to have to deal with these kinds of issues. Unfortunately, however, when it happens at a time that's not convenient for both communities. But when we look historically at schools, let's say 70 years ago, we had over 100-some-thousand school districts. Today, we only have roughly 14,000. And the population is continually shifting from west, south, southwestward. And so when it happens, the community need to be fully aware of why are we doing this and how are we going to best serve the needs of children. And again, Joe mentioned earlier the fact about the histories of schools. For example, Marshall and Albion had an unbelievable rivalry in basketball and football. Now you merge these schools. What about the histories of these schools and the people who played basketball and football? Are those histories lost? And oftentimes when people get so mired in conflict, they tend to forget that some people are literally reflecting back on the time they were in school. And is my history and the contributions I made, are they lost? And so how do we capture that and so that people can still feel as if they are part of a community despite the fact that they are being consolidated?
In the case of Albion and Marshall, we're also talking about very different demographics in terms of income, and especially in terms of race.
Yes. Yes.
So when such a merger consolidation is about to happen, what's the right thing here for someone in a position of decision-making, a position of authority in either Albion or Marshall to do to try and make that transition work?
Let me, I worked in Grand Rapids for many years as the director of the EEO, and we had to close or consolidate number of schools. And the most important thing for administrators to remember and recognize that we are here to ensure that all children will receive a high-quality education. Unfortunately, however, many children come from different cultural backgrounds. Many staff come from backgrounds where they have little or no experience with children of different ethnicities. One of the major issues we had to contend with dealt with issues of discipline and how people perceive what you may call insubordinate behavior. Case in point, some individual, I remember principals saying, well, we had a fight in the auditorium or whatever. Well, when we talked to people about a fight, we found that individuals had different definitions of the word fighting. To some people, a fight might mean a fisticuff, you're passing. And some individuals may say, well, the person had this verbal exchange. It was a terrible fight. Well, we were getting kids suspended for fighting, and in essence, it was how the individual perceived that issue. So when we bring children from many different ethnic and socioeconomic background, it is absolutely imperative that we have individuals who are aware of the culture of individuals, that they are able to educate staff about differences, and there needs to be staff development training to help individuals become more cognizant of individuals that's coming from different groups.
And that training, that professional development, doesn't simply lie with the teachers. I think that the administrators really need that as well. And in North Carolina, that's, in a sense, a lot of what we did was sit down with the administration first and say, how are we going to merge these two very different school districts, a city district and then the county district? Getting them to understand some of the nuances and some of the baggage that they were bringing to that situation before we could ever even then deal with the principals. And then once we dealt with the principals, the assistant principals and the like, then we moved on to the faculty, because now the central administration, the building administration, understood some of the major problems that could emerge. And as a result, now we could work with the teachers, and they could help the situation along rather than carrying their old baggage in and igniting fires that really ought not to be ignited.
And Joe, I would add that the administration need to carefully examine their policies, continue to monitor their policies to see if the policies they have in effect may have an adverse impact upon some groups. Policies that may relate to participation in curricular and extracurricular activities, who is the kinds of dollars that are appropriated to ensure that all students can participate equally, that there is, so there's the need to monitor your policy to ensure and update it so that it reflect the children from different backgrounds, so that they would not become adversely impacted.
Yes, and I think that also keeping your eye on what Walter talked about earlier, the idea is that the focus has to be on the education and providing the children with the best education possible. And you can't allow that focus to be deterred by, oh, well, this is our mascot, and this is this, you know, we all these different things that come into play emotionally from the communities, that really we have to come back and say, what is it we're doing? And when Walter was talking about policies, I want to add that a lot of times when we see districts trying to merge, particularly culturally diverse districts, we see the emergence of a form of tracking that is just very, very dangerous and very, it's a terrible focus to have when you're trying to educate all children.
Explain tracking to people who aren't in education.
Tracking is essentially where you sort children by their perceived abilities. And unfortunately, their perceived abilities are oftentimes directly related to race, ethnicity, and social class, so that you have the upper tracks where you have your honors students and your advanced placement students and your college credit students taking those courses, and then you have your basic courses, your general courses, and you put your poor and minority students into those classes while you have your upper class, middle class, majority students in the honors classes.
And Joe, that's such an important part to talk about, because when students are tracked, placed at different levels, the quality of education children receive are different. And so if children are in the lower track courses, they can't compete and do well on tests, which could help to determine what colleges and universities children are going to. And it's also going to lower a school district's overall image as it relates to how well children are performing. And so administrators need to monitor the distribution of children in all classes to ensure that all students they're represented proportionately, at least to the representation within the population.
just wanted to ask about size of district, because that is often what is thrown out here in terms of school consolidation, maybe not so much in the Albion Marshall case, but in others where the state has been trying to encourage some consolidation which would lead to some larger districts, not as many, but the districts then would have to be bigger if you're going to consolidate them. Is there a right size, I guess I wonder, or is there some link between size of district and education? Can you have a really big district and it runs fine? Can you have a really small district and still offer everything that can make a full and complete education for a student?
I would say yes, yes to both. They are excellent, large metropolitan school districts. And yes, they are excellent small school districts. The question eventually that I think school districts will eventually have to answer is, if the population is not stable and it literally there's an out migration of migration of the population, or if new companies come into a community which increases the population, schools obviously have to adjust. Now, naturally, whenever new people are coming in because of employment, it's a wonderful opportunity for schools to build new buildings and get additional money. But it's very difficult to downsize, because downsizing means you're losing resources, you're losing staff, you're having to close building. That's what makes it so horrific. So that's going to be an issue that schools, communities will face forever. When you ask the question, what makes a good school district? I will tell you in my own personal opinion and experience is that when you have community that cares, demands the best for their children, and you hire the appropriate staff who also carry those same sentiments, that they want to make sure that every child, irrespective of socioeconomic standing, ethnicity, and what have you, will get a good education. And when that is apparent, that we will not tolerate less than excellent in our school, then that's when you have good schools and good communities.
I agree. But one of the things in terms of size, Walter's absolutely correct. The size doesn't predict how well the students will achieve. But you do have to take size into consideration because, for example, in the Upper Peninsula, if you were to consolidate some of those school districts, then you're creating an enormous hardship on some of the children who now have to ride 3 hours to get to school. And I think that you really have to begin to look at all of the issues. And again, we talked about earlier about transparency. Be transparent about what's happening. And in the age of technology today, there are a myriad of opportunities that we have that we are not taking advantage of.
Such as?
Distance learning, two-way interactive, where children in different sites can actually talk to one another. And the responsibilities for educating those children are placed on several adults rather than simply one adult in one classroom in one building.
You know, even in the Upper Peninsula, for example, many school districts cannot afford to hire, let's say, a physics teacher. But by going online, you may have several buildings that are far apart who are now teaching a physics class to children in 3, 4, 5 different buildings spread out throughout the county.
You know, and another issue that we haven't touched on is school funding. And I think that may be a topic for another time.
But it's part of what's driving
it's absolutely. I mean, the cuts that have happened to K-12 education in the country, not just in Michigan, because if you look at Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, I mean, if you begin to look, the cuts that have been happening in education are severe enough that they have been impairing the quality of education for all children. And I think that that's something that when we look at these mergers, we have to look to the state, because it's the state's responsibility for the education of all children. And I think that they've been advocating that responsibility, and that's something that, you know, people don't like to talk about, but it needs to be, it's the elephant in the room. And when it comes down to it, a lot of these issues come back to funding. And one example that was given is that if we did not give these state tests and we didn't have to pay the testing companies to do well, because the state tests really don't do much except allow you to compare districts. But if we got rid of those, that would be approximately between $100 and $125 per pupil that will be going back to the school districts. So how are we spending our money when we're trying to educate our kids rather than, you know, trying to test them and to sort them?
And Joe, we also know that whenever we have a community that's losing its population, they're literally losing dollars in state aid. Well, and oftentimes, many of these districts have other kinds of bills. They have older buildings, security, and the maintenance is really high. So unfortunately, having to pay for those kinds of services, maintenance, painting, upkeep of building, literally leave schools in a greater jeopardy in terms of trying to provide a quality education for children.
Walter Burt and Joe Kredovics, thank you both for your time.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Walter Burt and Joe Kredovics are both professors in Western Michigan University's Department of Educational Leadership, Research, and Technology. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.